me with that gleam in his eye. Was it the fatal lure of evil? Perhaps he does want to bring Croker to the front. How many times over the centuries has ladies stood like that, about to loose fire and sword? She said, "We do need to move this headquarters nearer to the action. The communications lag has become unacceptable. Swan, hand me that map there." Swan plucked a map off a sideboard cluttered with mystic paraphernalia. His caution indicated that he found that stuff obscure and wanted it to stay that way. The map portrayed the far south. A large blank space on its left was labeled Shindai Kus, which was a desert. Beyond the unmapped nether edge of the desert was additional blank space labeled Ocean. Beginning in the Shindai Kus, running east and curving northward, are mountains generically referred to as the Danda Presh. They become rougher and rougher as they swerve around to form, eventually, the eastern limits of the Taglian territories. The range changes its local name frequently. It's supposed to be impassable east of the Shindai Kus, except through the high pass at Charandaprash. Long Shadow, Shadow Catch, and Overlook lie on the far side of the Danda Presh. Mogaba's army was the cork in the pass, bottlenecking the road south. For ages, a common subject when officers weren't listening was how badly would we get whipped if we took a crack at Mogaba. A racket apparently arose outside because Swan jumped to the window. "A courier," he announced. I could hear no sound from outside that room. In fact, when I did glance out the window, I could see nothing but grayness. Strange. Lady elbowed Swan aside. "Can't be good news. Get him before he talks too much." Swan returned quickly. "It's not too bad. Seems a really huge mob of Shadar and Vedna fanatics were chasing Blade and had the bad luck to catch him." "What?" "That wasn't news. I knew about it. The Shadow Master knew about it." "Of course. Lady didn't have a smoke or a screaming nut sidekick with a flying carpet. And I had known for just a little while. Maybe it seemed longer because I learned it so far away." "What are you babbling?" Lady demanded. "Blade wiped out over 5,000 religious goofs who were after him to punish him for his religious excesses." Blade was pretty hard on temples and priests when he had the opportunity. His religious attitude had a lot to do with his running away, too. He had made thorough, blood-bitter enemies of all Taglian priests long before his falling out with the old man. The devout considered his fall from favor a blessing from heaven. I was confident that the priests secretly looked forward to all of our fates becoming gifts from the angels. 5,000. Maybe more. Maybe up to 7,000. Loose on their own, how could that happen? Neither the ruling family nor we liked having huge groups of armed men not under our control, blundering around righting wrongs. "Out. All of you, out of here. Come back in 2 hours." Lady started murmuring the instant she was alone. "That damned Croker." She grabbed stuff off the sideboard. "He's out of his mind." I learned that you got damned focused out there with smoke. Time could rush past if you let yourself become introspective. Fragments of all that was happening to me came to me in no rational order, and I almost got lost trying to piece the puzzle together. Realization, and resulting terror, feeble as it was out there, brought me back to the present in the place I was watching when I lost my concentration. Hours had passed. Lady was still grumbling about the old man. What's the matter with him? How could he believe those damned rumors? She was angry. She had managed some mystic scrying of the distant battlefield as it appeared after the event. All that carnage had left her more upset. Damned fool! It was the worst disaster for Taglian Arms since Dejigore. From some hidden recess in the sideboard, she produced a piece of black cloth. I was startled, despite having studied her annals closely. That was the silk rummel of a master strangler. She began exercising with the killing scarf. Maybe that helped her relax. She was upset because she'd been left out of something. Usually she was the captain's partner. Got you a clue, woman, I thought. Lately he's cutting everybody out. Lady's scarf flashed. She was good. I wondered. Was there still some connection with Kina? Did Croker fear there might be? They were not called deceivers for nothing. She calmed herself. She sent for her council. Once they gathered, she said, "There were survivors from that battle. Some are still there burying the dead. Catch me a few." Chapter 53. Croker never came to the hidden room. Neither did One Eye, nor even the Radishah, to torment our prisoner. Nobody wakened me. I drifted back there almost without design, perhaps summoned by my body. I'd been gone a long time, longer than the subjective time spent out there. My stretch of introspection must have extended farther than it had seemed. My stomach was roaring, but Mother Goda's baked rocks were all gone. The strangler had gotten the cloth off himself again. He watched me wide-eyed. I got the feeling he'd been about to do something that I would regret. I discovered that he'd managed to work one hand free. You naughty boy. I took a long pull off the pitcher of water, then fixed him up again. Then I tried to decide whether to risk the labyrinth once more, in an effort to get to some of Mother Goda's lethal chow, or to stay and take yet another look at the wide world through Smoke's eyes while I awaited help.
Water.
Sorry, pal. I don't think so. Unless maybe you want to tell me what your buddies are up to. My belly grumbled again. The strangler didn't answer. Weak as he was, his will remained firm. Even ignoring my own presence, it seemed somebody should have come to feed him. It was late. Maybe Mother Goda was asleep and Sari would handle my meal. She didn't cook like she was out for vengeance. I was at the doorway, trying to make up my mind. Was there some way to mark my passage? Some way to follow footprints in the dust? But there was no light. This part of the palace was not in regular use. No one maintained any candles or torches. The lamp in the chamber behind me would be the only light available. Unless I waited till daylight, when the sun would steal in through random cracks and tiny windows. I glanced back at the lamp. It had been burning a long time. No one had been by to fuel it. I ought to see about refilling it before I did anything else. There was a metallic sound from far, far away, come around 100 corners and down the rambling halls. It chilled me despite Taglios's natural heat and humidity.
Water.
Shut up. I found a beaker of lamp oil, cocked my head while I worked. The metallic sound didn't repeat itself. I hadn't covered the strangler again. When I glanced at him, I discovered his death's head face stretched in a grin. It was the grin of death. Spilling oil, I flung myself out of there. I got lost again. Fast. Chapter 54. Lost in the palace wasn't a matter for panic, so I didn't. I confess to a certain amount of frustration, though. You would think my situation vulnerable to the application of common sense. I sure thought so. One good rule proved to be not to enter any corridor dustier than the one I was using. Another was to avoid apparent shortcuts, religiously. They never led anywhere I wanted to go. Most important was, don't yield to emotion or frustration. The palace is the only place in the world where you can step through a doorway and end up on a different floor. I found out the hard way. And it was not any sort of elf magic. It came from the place being a conglomeration of ages and ages of add-ons built upon very uneven ground. My anxiety reached the point where I elected to pursue what seemed the wimp route. I decided to go down to ground level, find one of the palace's 1,000 postern doors, which can be opened only from the inside, and get out into the street. Out there, I would know where I was. I would walk around to the entrance I used regularly. Then I would be home. It's really dark in there in the middle of the night. I found that out after I stumbled descending a stair and dropped my lamp. It broke, of course, and for a while there was a lot of light down below. But soon the fire burned out. Oh, well. It was a certainty that there would be a door to the street below. The stairwell curved down against an exterior wall. I had leaned out a window to make sure before I ever entered it. Descending an ancient stair that spirals isn't easy when there are no handrails and you can't see what you're doing. Nevertheless, I got to the bottom without breaking any bones, although I did slip a couple of times, and endured one long spell of vertigo after passing through the smoke from the burned lamp fuel. Eventually the stair ended. I felt around for a door. As I did so, I frowned. What was I doing? Took me a moment to reach back into my head and bring up the answer. I found the door, felt around for a release. I found an old-fashioned wooden latch bar, which wasn't what I expected at all. I yanked, pushed. The door swung outward. Wrong answer to your problem, Mergen. Within that fastness, nothing moves, though at times mists of light shimmer as they leak over from beyond the gates of dream. Shadows linger in corners, and way down inside the core of the place, in the feeblest throb of the heart of darkness, there is life of a sort. A massive wooden throne stands upon a dais at the heart of a chamber so vast only a sun could light it all. Upon that throne, a body sprawls, veiled by shoals of shadow, pinioned by silver knives driven through its feet and hands. Sometimes that body sighs softly in its sleep. Impelled by bitter dreams, it crawl behind its sightless eyes. This is survival of a sort. In the night, when the wind no longer licks through its unglazed windows, nor prances along its untenanted halls, nor whispers to its million creeping shadows. That fortress is filled with the silence of stone. Chapter 55. No will. No identity. At home in the House of Pain. Chapter 56.
There you are! Where have you been? Welcome back to...
The House of Pain? Chapter 57. The House of Pain. I went there, but do not remember the journey or the visit. I was on hands and knees on broken pavement. My palms and knees hurt. I lifted a hand. My palm was torn. Blood oozed from a dozen abrasions. My mind was numb. I raised my other hand, began picking out bits of paving brick. 50 yards away, the side of a building glowed olive, pulsating. A circle of masonry blew outward. Shadows sprang out of the darkness. With weapons bare, they scrambled through the hole. Shouts and the clang of metal came from inside. I got up and wandered in that direction, vaguely interested, but not sure why, not even thinking definable thoughts.
Hey!
A shadow at that hole stared at me. I didn't yell, so that must have been the shadow.
That you, Mergen?
I kept walking, head spinning. My course curved to the right. I banged into the side of a building. After that, I had a sure means of navigation. Like a drunk, I steered by keeping one hand on the wall.
Here he is!
The shadow pointed at me.
Candles? Yeah! You all right? What did they do to you?
I had little pains everywhere. I felt like I'd been stabbed and cut and burned.
Who?
Nobody did anything. Did they? Where am I? When?
Huh?
A man leaned through the side of the building. He wore a scarf wrapped around his face. Only his eyes were visible. He studied me momentarily, popped back inside. Somebody in there yelled. People jumped into the street. Some carried bloody weapons. All were masked. A couple grabbed my arms and took off. We scurried through darkened streets in a nighted city, and no one would answer my panted questions, so for a while I had no idea when I was or where. Then we crossed an open space from which I glimpsed the citadel of Dejigore. That answered my most immediate questions. But a new crop sprouted. Why were we outside the company's part of town? How had I gotten there? Why didn't I have any memories of this? I recalled sitting with Kidam, secretly lusting after his granddaughter. The men accompanying me removed their wraps and masks. They were company, plus Uncle Doge and a couple of Nguyen Bao sprites. We ducked into an alleyway that led to Nguyen Bao territory.
Slow down, I gasped. What's going on?
Somebody snatched you,
Candles explained.
At first we thought Mogaba did it.
Huh?
Shadow Spinner's taken his whole army off after Lady. We could walk away if we wanted. We thought he decided to take a hostage.
I didn't believe Spinner was gone. Uncle Doge, the last thing I remember was sipping tea with the speaker.
You began to behave oddly, Stone Soldier.
I growled. He didn't apologize.
The speaker thought perhaps you had been drinking before you arrived. He instructed Taide to take you home. He was offended. You proved to be such a burden that Taide was unable to defend himself when you were attacked. He was beaten badly, but managed to get home with word. Your friends began looking for you as soon as we informed them.
His tone suggested that he wondered why they'd bothered.
They seem more skilled than they pretend. They pinpointed you quickly. You were not in the Citadel, which is where Mogaba would have confined you.
How did I get clear across town? I winced. In addition to the other pains, I had a hangover-type headache. I'd been drugged. Nobody had an answer for me.
Is this the same night, Uncle?
Yes, but many hours later. And it definitely wasn't Mogaba that grabbed me. No, there were no Na in that place. In fact, soon after you were taken, someone attacked Mogaba too. They may have planned to murder him.
Jai Curry? Maybe the locals wanted to get to the heart of the problem.
Perhaps.
He didn't sound convinced. Maybe he should have taken prisoners.
Where's One Eye?
Only One Eye could have ripped that hole in the wall back there. Candles told me.
Covering our back trail.
Good. I was near normal now, which meant I was as confused as ever, I guess. Whoever grabbed me had done some slick work to sneak through Nguyen Bao territory unnoticed. Uncle Doge divined my thoughts.
We have not determined how the villains managed to ambush you, nor how the others got so close to Mogaba. Those four did pay in blood.
He killed them?
By all reports, it was an epic battle. Four against one.
Goody for Mogaba. Even he deserves a little happiness in life. We were approaching the tenement that masqueraded as company headquarters. I invited everybody in. The boys got a fire going. When One Eye showed up, I suggested he see if he couldn't scare up some beer, but I had heard there was some floating around, and we sure could use a drink. Grumbling, One Eye returned to the night. Before long, he and Goblin turned up lugging a barrel.
On me, I told everybody.
One Eye made a whining noise.
I stripped down and flopped onto a table,
which is why the fire. To take the edge off the chill.
How do I look, One Eye?
His tone was that of a man responding to a stupid question.
Like a guy that's been tortured. You don't know how you ended up in the street?
My guess is they heard you coming and tossed me out to distract you while they got away.
Didn't work. Roll onto your side.
I spotted a face outside the open door.
Come in here. Have a beer with us.
The outsider, Sindhu, joined us. He accepted a mug but appeared to be very uncomfortable. I noted how closely Uncle Doge watched him. Chapter 58. It was still that same adventurous night. I was still disoriented, still hurting, and definitely still exhausted. But here I was wrapping a rope around me so I could rappel down the outside of the wall.
You sure the Nar can't see us from the gate tower? Damn it, kid, will you just go? You fuss worse than a mother-in-law.
One I might know. He's had several. I started down. Why did I let Goblin and One Eye con me into this? Two Taglian soldiers were waiting when I reached the crude raft. They helped me board. I asked, how deep is the water?
7 feet,
the taller man replied. We can pole across. The rope stirred. I held it. Soon, the outsider Sindhu dropped onto the raft. Mine was the only help he got. The Taglians wouldn't even acknowledge his existence. I tugged the rope 3 times hard to let the top end know we were going. Start poling. The Taglians were volunteers chosen in part because they were well rested. They were quite happy to be leaving the city, and depressed because they would not get to stay gone. They considered this crossing an experiment. If we made it over, slipped through the southerners, then got back to Dejagore tomorrow night or the next, soon whole fleets would hazard the crossing. If we got back. If Shadow Spinner's men didn't intercept us. If we found Lady at all, which the soldiers didn't know to be part of the mission. One Eye and Goblin browbeat me into looking for Lady. Never mind them injuries, kid. They ain't shit. Sindhu was along because Ki Dom thought it was a good idea to get him out of Dejagore. Sindhu's opinion had not been asked. The Taglians were supposed to guard me and provide strong backs. Uncle Doge had wanted to come, but had failed to convince the speaker. The crossing was uneventful. Once we stepped ashore, I retrieved the tiny green wooden box from my pocket and released... the moth inside. It would fly back to Goblin, its arrival announcing my safe arrival. I had several more boxes, each a different color, and each containing a moth to be released in a particular circumstance. As we started to move up a ravine, Sindhu quietly volunteered to take the point.
I am experienced at this sort of thing, he told me, and I believed him within minutes.
He moved very slowly, very carefully, making no sound. I did all right, but not as well. The 2 Taglians might as well have worn cowbells. We hadn't gone far before Sindhu hissed a warning. We froze, while grumbling Shadowlanders filed across our track 20 yards uphill. I caught only enough conversation to understand that they preferred a warm blanket to a night patrol through the hills. Surprise. You would think things would be different in somebody else's army. We encountered another patrol an hour later. It too passed without detecting our presence. We were past the ridgeline when dawn began creeping in from the east, extending visibility to the point where it was too dangerous to keep moving. Sindhu told me,
"We must find a place of concealment."
Standard procedure in unfriendly territory. And it was no problem. The ravines out there were choked with brush. A man could disappear underneath easily, as long as he remembered not to wear his orange nightshirt. We disappeared. I started snoring seconds after we went to ground. And I didn't go anywhere else or anywhen. The smell of smoke wakened me. I sat up. Sindhu rose at almost the same instant. I found a crow studying me from so close I had to cross my eyes to focus on him. The Taglian who was supposed to be keeping watch was sleeping. So much for well rested. I said nothing. Neither did Sindhu. In moments, my fears were confirmed. A southern voice called out. Another answered. Crows laughed. Sindhu whispered,
"They know we are here?"
It sounded like he had trouble believing that. I lifted a finger requesting silence. I listened, picked out a few words.
"They know somebody's here. They don't know who.
They're unhappy because they can't just kill us. The Shadow Master wants prisoners.
They aren't trying to lure us out.
They don't know any of us can understand some of their dialect. The albino crow in front of me cawed and flapped its way up out of the brush. About 20 others joined it.
If we cannot evade them, we must surrender. We must not fight.
Sindhu was an unhappy young man. I agreed. I was an unhappy young man myself. The Taglian soldiers were two more unhappy young men. We evaded nothing and no one. The crows found our efforts amusing. Chapter 59. Time had no meaning. The Shadow Master's camp lay somewhere north of Dejagore. We four were among the earliest prisoners taken, but more soon joined us in our pen. Lots of Mugabe's guys wanted to leave town. He would have less trouble feeding the ones who stayed behind. One Eye and Goblin seemed to hold our part of town together. Nobody I knew became a prisoner. I didn't send any more moths, so they knew I had found trouble instead of Lady. Even our guards had no notion how Spinner meant to use us. We were happier not knowing, probably. I spent uncounted days in total misery. Piglets in a feedlot lived better than we did. More and more prisoners arrived. The food was inadequate. After a few meals, everybody got the runs. There were no sewage provisions, not even a simple slit trench. They wouldn't let us dig our own. Maybe they didn't want us getting too comfortable. In fact, our life wasn't much worse than that of the Shadowlander private soldiers. They had nothing anymore and could expect only nothing. They indulged in a ferocious desertion rate despite the Shadow Master's reputation. They hated Shadow Spinner for putting them into such an awful state. They took their anger out on us. I don't know how long we were there. I lost track. I was busy trying to die from dysentery. I noticed only that there was a sudden absence of crows one day. I was so used to having crows around that anymore, I noticed them only when they were not there. I faded in and out. I suffered a bunch of my spells. They were more frequent now and left me emotionally drained. The shits left me physically drained. If I could only get some sleep. Sindhu wakened me. I recoiled from his touch. It was astonishingly cold and seemed vaguely reptilian. I was the only man in the pen he knew, so he wanted to be my pal. I was willing to do without a friend. He offered me a cup of water. It was a rather nice tin cup. Where'd he get that?
Drink, he said. It's clean water.
All around us, prisoners lay in the mud, twitching endlessly in haunted sleep. Some cried out. Sindhu continued.
Something is going to happen.
What?
I felt the breath of the goddess.
For an instant, I smelled something that was not the stink of vomit or unwashed bodies or dead men or pools of liquid shit, too.
Ah, Sindhu whispered. It's happening now.
I looked where he pointed. The happening something was going on inside the big tent belonging to the Shadow Master. Lights of strange color flickered and flared.
Maybe he's getting something special ready for somebody. Maybe he had Lady spotted.
Sindhu snorted. He seemed to thrive in these conditions. The something went on a long time, but attracted no attention. I became suspicious. I had Goblin's ward against sleep spells set on me. Oh? I dragged myself to the compound fence. When nobody smashed me back with the butt of a spear, I was sure. The camp was under an enchantment. Sindhu's water gave me strength quickly and started my brain perking. It occurred to me that if no one was inclined to stop me, this might be the perfect time to take leave of the Shadow Master's hospitality. I started worming my way between the fence rails. My stomach rumbled in protest. I ignored it. Sindhu grabbed my arm. His grip was iron. He said, "Wait." I waited. What the hell? That was one of my favorite arms. I didn't want to deprive myself of its company. The moon began to rise, a big old squashed orange egg in the east. Sindhu continued to restrain me and continued to stare at the big tent. A shriek drifted down from high above. "Holy shit," I muttered. "Not him." Sindhu cursed too. He was so startled that he let me go. He glared upward. "That's the Howler," I told him. "Really bad news. Shadow Spinner could take advanced cruelty lessons from him." The side of Spinner's tent opened. Out rushed a bunch of people carrying what proved to be human body parts. I recognized some of them. The people, that is. Who could mistake Willow Swan with his wild yellow mane? Or Lady, who carried a severed head by its mangy hair? And Blade was only a step behind her, his ebony skin shining in the moonlight. I didn't recognize any of the others. The sleep spell on the camp laid rather poorly, unraveled. Southerners jumped up to ask what was happening. Metal clanged and jingled as weapons and mail were located. One of Lady's companions, a huge Shadar, started bellowing something about bowing down to the true Daughter of Night. Sindhu chuckled. Nothing bothered him, it seemed. He could take anything. He wasn't holding on to me, but I no longer had the strength, or inclination, to go anywhere. Chapter 60. They pulled it off. Lady and her damn fool gang. Audacity pays. They slipped into the camp, murdered Shadow Spinner, and when they got caught, they convinced the Southerners that it was all fated and they shouldn't go doing anything because of that. I couldn't be much of a witness to their mass conversion. My bowels overruled my desire to observe. I spent most of my time making a worse mess of myself. At some point, our former guards decided to bring us to Lady's attention in an effort to curry favor. Blade recognized us as they brought us out of the pen. Blade looks like he might have been born Gnar. Like them, he's tall, black, and muscular, without an ounce of fat on him. He says little but has a strong presence. His background is shadowy. He ran with Willow Swan and Cordy Mather, who saved him from crocodiles several thousand miles north of Taglios. What everyone knew for sure, what Blade made no effort to hide, was that he hated priests. Singly, collectively, and without any prejudice whatsoever, where belief system was concerned. Once I thought he was an atheist, who hated the whole idea of gods and religion, but after further exposure I decided it was only the retailers of religion he detested. That suggested sharp incidents in his past. No matter now, Blade took Sindhu and I away from our guards. "Standard bearer,"
You stink.
Call out the ladies in waiting. Let them give me a bath. I couldn't remember my last bath. In Dejigore, we didn't waste water on trivialities. Of course, now we could all bathe all we wanted, although the water would be unclean.
Blade obtained fresh clothing by the expedient of robbing some southern officers. Had us clean up and visit the inadequate field physicians Croker had tried to train for the Taglian forces. They knew less about stopping the drizzling shits than I did. It was daylight when Lady saw me. She already knew the prisoners were deserters from the city. She was blunt.
Why did you run out, American?
I didn't. We decided somebody had to come find you. I lost the election. She was in a bleak mood, apparently pretty sick herself. Never mind the humor, Mergen. One-eyed Goblin figured I was the only trustworthy guy who had any chance of getting through. They couldn't leave. I didn't make it, though.
Why did you feel the need to send someone?
Mogaba elected himself God. With the water around us, keeping the southerners back, he doesn't need to get along with anybody who doesn't agree.
Sindhu said, "The black men believe they serve the goddess mistress, but their heresies are grotesque. They have become worse than unbelievers."
I pricked up my ears. Maybe I would learn something about Sindhu's bunch. I had bones to pick with them. I hadn't yet found any evidence to suggest that it wasn't them who kidnapped me and took a crack at murdering Mogaba. Still, I couldn't imagine why they would bother. Sindhu and Lady talked. Her questions sounded vaguely doctrinal. Sindhu's replies made no sense. Once Lady interrupted the interview to be sick. A skinny little gink named Narayan, who kept hanging around, seemed inordinately pleased. I noted that Sindhu showed him considerable deference. I wasn't happy. The little I knew of their cult assured me that I didn't want them influencing my captains. The interview ended. Blade's cronies took me away. I got to hang out with Swan and Mather, meaning I had somebody to speak a reasonable language with for a while, but soon I felt like a forgotten man.
"What are we doing?"
I asked Swan.
"I don't know. Cordy and I just tag along behind her lordship, pretending not to be watching her for the Prabhrindra Dra and Radisha."
"Pretending? Ain't much good being a spy if everybody knows it, is there?
Anyway, Cordy gets to do all the worrying. He's the one playing patty cake with the woman."
"You mean that ain't just a vicious rumor? He's really pluking the Radisha?"
"Hard to believe, ain't it? She's got a face like... Hey, Cordy! Where's them cards? We got us a pigeon here thinks he can play tonk."
"Thinks? Swan, you're gonna think I invented the game if you get into it with me." Mather was a nondescript character of average height with ginger hair who stood out only because he was white in a land where nobody but harem girls, kept out of the sun from birth, had fair skin. He asked,
"Willow's mouth running away with him again?"
"Maybe. I've made a career playing tonk. Hell, they boot you out of the black company if you don't make journeyman player."
Mather shrugged. "Then you'll twist Willow's head back around straight for him. Here, deal. I'll see if the mighty General Blade wants to sit in."
Swan grumbled.
"That would take him out of sight of Lady."
Sounded like some sour grapes there. Mather showed him a smirk that confirmed my guess. What is it about her? I asked. Every damned guy that walks on his hind legs gets near her for 5 minutes. He starts floating around with his tongue hanging down, banging into things. But I've been around her for years. I can see she's got the right stuff in the right places, put together about as good as you could want, but I don't think I could get excited even if she didn't used to be the lady and she wasn't married to the old man. Not that that was literally true. They hadn't even bothered to jump over a sword. Swan shuffled. Cut. I cut. I always cut. One Eye taught me that. Swan asked, "You really don't feel it? Man, she comes around me and my brain goes south. And she's a widow now, so I don't think so." "What?" "She ain't no widow. Croker's still alive." "Shit. That'd be my luck, too. You want to stack core to your hand, make him think he's got a winner, then skunk him?" As soon as I shook my head, he wanted to know how come I thought Croker was alive. I evaded a definitive answer for the few moments it took Mather to return. "Blad's too busy looking for an angle to use while he's close to the magic. You load me up again, Willa?" "No? Bullshit. Let's just pick them up and deal them over." "Ain't this the story of my life?" I grumbled. "Look here. I had two aces, a pair of deuces, and a tray. An automatic winner. Damned near couldn't be beat. And that's a true natural, no help." Swan snickered. "Don't matter. You don't got anything to do anyway." "You got a point. Why don't you guys come over to Digigore? I'll buy you a mug of One Eye's home brew." "Competition, huh?" Swan and Mather had gone into the brewing business back when they first came to Taglios. They were out of the racket now. Among their reasons, the fact that the priests of all the native religions condemned the use of alcohol. "I doubt it. The only thing good about their brew is it gets you skunked." "That was the only good thing about the rat piss we made," Mather said. "My dear old daddy, the brewmaster, rolled over every time we tapped another keg." "We never laid any beer up," Swan countered. "Soon as it was ripe, we skimmed the scum off and poured it down Taglian throats. And don't buy that shit about his daddy, neither. Old man Mather was a tax assessor who was so dumb he didn't take bribes." "Shut up and deal." Mather snatched up his cards. "He did brew his own beer. And Swan's old man was a hot carrier. But a handsome one, Cordy. And a lover. I inherited his good looks." "You take after your mother. And if you don't do something about that hair pretty soon, you're going to wind up in somebody's harem." This was a side of these guys I hadn't seen before. But I hadn't spent much time loafing with them. They weren't company. I kept my mouth shut and concentrated on my cards and let them tell me about who they used to be before the wander dust settled on their shoes and sent them roving against all odds. "What about you, Mergen?" Swan asked after he noticed that I was winning more than my share of hands. "Where did you come from?" I told them about growing up on a farm. There wasn't anything exciting about my life, until I decided that farming wasn't what I wanted to do. I joined one of Lady's armies, found out I didn't like the way things were done there, deserted and joined up with the Black Company, which was the only place I could hide with the provost after me. Mather asked, "You ever regret leaving home?" "Every goddamned day, Mather. Every goddamned day. It was boring, raising potatoes, but
Not one time did I ever have a spud try to stick a knife in me. I was hardly ever hungry and almost never cold, and the landlord was all right. He made sure his tenants had enough before he took his share. He didn't live much better than we did. Oh, and the only magic we ever saw was the kind your wandering conjurers perform at town fairs.
So why not go home?
Can't. If you're careful and don't look prosperous and don't go around pissing people off, you can travel almost anywhere safely. We did. I can't go home, because home ain't there no more. A rebel army came through a couple years after I left. The company passed through later still, marching from somewhere unpleasant to somewhere where we would be unhappy. The whole country had been turned desert in the name of freedom from the tyranny of the Ladies' Empire. Chapter 61. Lady sent for me after 6 days. I had shaken the runs and had eaten well enough to regain a few of the pounds I lost in the pen. I still looked like a refugee from hell, and I was. I was indeed. Lady didn't look good. Tired, pale, under severe pressure, apparently still fighting the sickness that had her puking the other day. She wasted no time on small talk. I'm sending you back to Dejagore, Mergen. We're getting disturbing reports about Mogapa. I nodded. I'd heard some of them. Every night more rafts crossed the lake. The deserters and refugees always were astonished to learn that Shadow Spinner was dead and Lady controlled his army, though that was evaporating through desertion, too. Lady was a hard one. My guess was she meant to let the problem posed by Mogapa solve itself, despite what that would cost Taglios and the Black Company. Why? That wasn't smart. All those Taglians in there had relatives back home. Many were people of place and substance, for it was that sort who'd volunteered to defend Taglios.
I need you to just go back and be yourself, but write things down, hone your skills, keep the company together, be prepared for anything.
I grunted. That wasn't something I wanted to hear, knowing that the siege could be ended right now. Lady sensed my reservations. She smiled wanly, made a sudden gesture.
Sleep, Mergen.
I collapsed on the spot. She was her nasty old self. My mind wouldn't clear. The Taglians who'd helped me leave Dejagore were like zombies. They didn't talk and seemed almost blind. Down, I muttered. Patrol coming. They did what I said, but like men heavily drugged. Patrols were few by day. It was easy to elude them. It wasn't their mission to keep people out anyway. We reached Lakeside without any trouble. Rest, I ordered. Wait for dark. I wasn't sure why we'd crossed the hills by day. I didn't recall starting. Have I been acting real weird? I asked. The taller Taglian shook his head slowly. Not quite sure. He was more confused than I was. I said, I feel like I walked out of a fog a couple hours ago. I remember getting captured. I remember them keeping us in a nasty pen. I know there was a fight or something, but I don't remember how we got away.
Nor do I, sir,
the shorter soldier said.
I do have a very strong feeling that we need to get back to our comrades quickly, but I don't know why.
How about you? The taller man nodded, frowning. He was going to bust a vein trying to remember. I said,
Maybe Shadow Spinner did something to us and let us go. That's worth keeping in mind. Especially if you have urges that really surprise you. After dark, we stole along the shoreline till we found a raft, jumped aboard, and headed for Dejigore. And discovered immediately that we were going to get nowhere using poles. The water was too deep. We ended up using poles and broken boards as inefficient paddles. It took us half the night to make the crossing. And then, naturally, everything went to hell. One Eye was on watch and had been passing the time making love to a keg of beer. He heard water splash and people ask for a hand up and concluded that the evil hordes were upon him, whereupon he flung fireballs hither and yon so any handy archers could plink us. One Eye recognized me before more than 3 or 4 arrows whizzed past. He yelled for a ceasefire, but the damage had been done. The Gnar at the north gate saw us. We were far enough away that they shouldn't recognize faces. But the possibility that the old crew might have outside contacts would get Mogaba's interest.
"Hi, kid. Good to see you,"
One Eye said as I clambered to the top of the wall.
"We thought you was dead."
"We was going to have a funeral in a few more days if we got time. I've been stalling it. Account of if you was officially dead, then I'd have to start keeping the annals."
Generously, he offered me a drink from his very own, unwashed for a fortnight mug. I declined the honor.
"You all right, kid?"
"I don't know. Maybe you can tell me." I told him what I could remember.
"You have another spell?"
"If I did, these guys had it with me."
"Interesting. Come around and see me about it tomorrow."
"Tomorrow?"
"I'm gonna be off watch in 10 minutes, and I intend to hit the sack. And you need some sleep yourself."
"My pal. Don't know what I would do if I didn't have One Eye to worry about me." Chapter 62. Bucket wakened me.
"One of Mogaba's guys is here, Mergen. Says His Majesty wants to see you."
I groaned.
"Does it have to be so bright out there?"
I hadn't bothered to go down into the warrens.
"He's pissed off. We've been pretending you were here but couldn't talk to him. The Goblin and One Eye put doubles of you on the wall sometimes so the Gnar could see you. And now you have the real Mergen back, you want to throw him to the wolf?"
Well, he didn't ask for nobody else."
"Meaning, he didn't want Goblin or One Eye. He wanted to stay away from those two."
"Find my bitty buddies and tell them I need them. Now."
The wizards turned up, at their own leisure, of course. I told them, "Put me in a litter and lug me over to the Citadel. We're going to admit that you've been lying about me, but only because I was totally sick. What we were doing on that raft last night was taking baths. You thought it would be cute to pop off a few fireballs while I had my pants down." One Eye started to complain, but before he could start, I growled,
"I won't face Mogaba without backup. He don't have any reason to be nice anymore."
"He won't be in a good mood," Goblin predicted. "There's been rioting. Food shortages are getting really bad. He won't turn one grain of rice loose. Even his hand-picked Taglian sergeants have started to desert."
"It's all falling apart for him," I said. He was going to take over and show the world wonders, but his followers can't match his iron will.
And we're some kind of philanthropic brotherhood?
One Eye muttered.
We never kill nobody who don't ask for it. Come on, let's do it, and be ready for anything, both of you.
But first, we went up to the battlements, both so I could see this world by daylight, and so the Narth and Northgate could see me looking sick before I presented myself that way. The water level was just 8 feet below the ramparts, higher than Hong Tre's prediction. Any flooding inside?
Mokaba sealed the gate somehow. He has Jaikuri working parties, bucket brigade and what seepage there is.
Good for him. How about down below?
There's some seepage in the catacombs. Not a lot. We could keep up by hauling it up in buckets.
I grunted. I stared at Shadow Spinner's lake. I saw more corpses than I could count. Those didn't float up from the mounds, did they? Goblin told me,
Mokaba threw people off the wall during the rites, and some might be from rafts that turned over or broke up.
I squinted. I could just make out a mounted patrol beyond the water. A raft with Jaikuri piled high had been caught by daylight. The people aboard were trying to move away from the waiting patrol by paddling with their hands. Tai Day turned up, so we knew his people were watching. I figured he would want me to visit the speaker. But he said nothing. I told my bearers, take me to his worship. As we approached, I observed, the citadel looks like something out of a spook story. And it did, with the sky overcast behind it and crows swarming around. Dejigore was a paradise for crows. They were going to get too fat to fly. Maybe we would get fat eating them. The Gnar at the entrance would not let One Eye and Goblin inside. So take me home, I told them.
Wait!
Stick it, buddy. I got no need to put up with Mogaba's crap. The lieutenant is alive. So is the captain, probably. Mogaba ain't shit nowhere but inside his own head anymore.
You could have at least argued until we were rested up.
One Eye started shuffling sideways so he could turn and head back down the steps. Ochiba caught us before we reached street level. He was cast in the same mold as Onar. His face remained neutral.
Apologies, standard bearer. Won't you reconsider?
Reconsider what? I don't especially want to see Mogaba. He's been eating magic mushrooms or chewing lucky weed or something. I've been shitting my guts out for over a week. I ain't in no shape to play games with no homicidal lunatic.
Something fluttered behind Ochiba's dark eyes. Maybe he agreed. Maybe there was another war going on inside him, a struggle between keeping faith with Gaez Lee's greatest Gnar ever and keeping faith with his own humanity. I was not going to pursue it. Any hint of outside interest would push waverers in the direction of, that's the way it's always been. That was the top two then, quietly questioning Mogava's way. If these guys doubted him, things were probably worse than I thought.
As you wish,
Ochiba told the sentries.
Let the litter bearers in.
Nobody missed the significance of who my litter bearers were. It was a pretty direct statement. I felt comfortably confrontational. Chapter 63. Was Mogaba happy to see Goblin in One Eye and them looking so fit? You better believe he wasn't. But he didn't pursue his displeasure. He just ticked something on his mental get-even slate. He would make me even more unhappy than he'd planned. Later.
"Can you sit up?" he asked, almost like he cared.
"Yeah," I made sure. That's partly why it took so long. That, and I wanted to make sure I'd stay rational.
"Oh."
"I've been suffering severe fevers and dysentery for over a week. Last night they took me out and threw me in the water to cool me down. That worked."
"I see. Come to the table, please."
Goblin and One Eye helped me into a chair. They put on a fine show. There were just six people in the conference chamber, us three and Mogaba, Ochiba, and Sindawe. Through the window behind Mogaba, I saw water and hills, and crows. They squabbled over space on the windowsill, though none would come inside. An albino turned an especially baleful pink eye my way. I suppose we looked too hungry. For one instant, I saw that same room in another time, with Lady and some of the same faces around the same table. Mogaba was not among them. The window behind them opened on grayness. One Eye pinched my earlobe.
"Kid, now ain't the time."
Mogaba watched intently. "Less recovered than I thought," I explained. I wondered what the vision meant. And vision it was, because it was too fully realized for imagination. Mogaba settled into a chair opposite me. He pretended solicitousness, avoided his usual assertiveness.
"We face numerous grave problems, Standard Bearer. They are out there and indifferent to whatever animosities we have developed amongst ourselves."
Goddamn, was he going to turn reasonable on me?
"They will be there whether or not we want to believe the lieutenant or captain survived. We will have to face them because I do not expect to be relieved anytime soon."
I wouldn't argue with that.
"We would be better off had Lady not interfered this last time. We're isolated and trapped now because the Shadow Master was forced to find a solution for managing two fronts."
I nodded. We were in a worse situation. On the other hand, we would not have yowling hordes piling over the wall every few nights anymore. Nor would Mogaba be flinging men hither and yon without regard for their lives, just trying to irritate the Southerners into doing something stupid. Mogaba glanced out the window. We could see two Shadowlander patrols raising dust in the hills.
"He can starve us out now."
"Maybe."
Mogaba grimaced, but controlled his anger.
"Yes."
For no rational reason, I feel confident that our friends will break us out.
"I must confess that I remain a stranger to that sort of faith. Although I concede the importance of maintaining an optimistic aspect in front of the soldiers."
Was I going to argue? No. He was more right than I could be.
"So, Standard Bearer, how do we survive a protracted siege when most of our food stores are exhausted? How do we recover the standard once we do get out of these streets?"
I don't have any answers. Although I think the standard is in friendly hands already. Why was he interested? Almost every time we talked, he asked something about the standard. Did he believe possessing it would legitimize him?
"How so?"
He was surprised. The Widowmaker that was here the first time carried the real standard.
"You're sure?"
"I know it. I promised."
Then share your thoughts about food.
We could try fishing. Wisecracking wasn't a good idea with Mugaba. It just made Mugaba angry.
Ain't no joke, Goblin snapped. That water comes down here from regular rivers. There's got to be fish.
The little shit wasn't as stupid as he acted sometimes. Mugaba frowned.
Do we have anyone who knows anything about fishing?
He asked Sindawe.
I doubt it.
They meant among their Taglian soldiers, of course. Nar are warriors, back for a dozen generations. They don't sully themselves doing unheroic work. I was negligent. I failed to mention that the Nuang Bao came from country where fishing was probably a way of life.
It's a thought, Mugaba told me. And there is always baked crew.
He glanced back at the window.
But most Taglians won't eat flesh.
A conundrum, I agreed.
I will not surrender.
No reply seemed adequate.
You have no resources either.
Less than you. I lied. We still had a little rise from the catacombs, but not much. We were stretching ourselves every way possible, in accordance with hints recorded in the annals. We didn't look like famine victims. Not quite yet. We looked, I noted, less well-fed than did the Nar.
Suggestions for reducing the number of unproductive mouths.
I'm letting my worn-out Taglians and any locals who want build rafts and go. But I don't let them take anything with them. He controlled his anger again.
That does consume valuable timber. But it is another thought worth consideration.
I studied Sindawe and Ochiba. They remained jet statues. They weren't even breathing, it seemed. They expressed no opinions. Mugaba glared at me.
I feared this meeting would be this non-productive. You haven't even thrown the annals in my face.
The annals aren't magic. What they say about sieges is plain common sense stuff. Be stubborn. Ration. Don't support the non-productive. Control the spread of plague. Don't exhaust your enemy's patience if there's no hope of outlasting them. If surrender is inevitable, do it while your enemy is still amenable to terms.
This enemy never offered.
I wondered about that. Although the Shadow Masters did have a tendency to think like gods.
Thank you, Standard Bearer. We will examine our options and keep you informed of what we mean to do.
Goblin and One Eye helped me ease my chair back. They settled me into the litter. Mugaba said nothing else, and I could think of nothing I wanted to tell him. The other Nar just stood there awkwardly and watched us go.
What was that in aid of?
I asked once we were clear.
I expected yelling and threats. He wanted to pick your brains,
Goblin said.
While he made up his mind if he was going to kill you.
One I added cheerfully. Oh, that's real encouraging.
He did decide, Morgan. And he didn't pick the option you want to hear. It's time to start being real careful.
We did make it home unharmed. Chapter 64. Don't bother dragging me up there till we find out what Uncle wants. Goblin and One Eye were at the foot of steps leading to the battlements. Doge was up top, looking down.
I wasn't planning to carry your dead ass anywhere anyhow anymore.
One Eye told me. Far as I'm concerned, this exercise was for camouflage. Uncle Doge started downward. I stared at the wall. Tiny beads of sweat covered it, but that was because the stone was cooler than the air, not because water had begun seeping through from outside. The Shadow Masters were good builders.
Stone Soldier, you are well?
Not bad for a guy with the runs. Ready to dance in your grave, Stubby? We got business?
The Speaker wishes to see you.
Your excursion was not successful.
He moved his head to indicate my trip outside.
If you call spending 2 weeks as a guest of the Shadow Master a success, I tore them up, Uncle. Otherwise, all I did was get sick, lose some weight, then have barely enough sense left to run for it when some Taglians hit Shadow Spinner's camp with a nuisance raid. That's all right, I can walk that far. Just don't let me fall down any rabbit holes.
I could walk to the Speaker's place easily, but why give up the pretense of weakness if it might be useful? Nothing changed with the Speaker's crew, except that this time one smell was absent. I noticed that as soon as I stepped inside. I couldn't identify the missing odor, though. The Speaker was ready. Hong Trey was in place. The beautiful one had tea brewing. Kidam smiled.
Tai De ran ahead.
He read my curiosity from my glance and flaring nostrils.
Don has gone to his judgment. At last, a bleak season has ended for this house.
I couldn't help myself. I looked at the young woman. I found her looking at me. Her gaze shifted immediately, but not so fast that I didn't feel guilty when I returned attention to the Speaker. The old man missed nothing. Neither did he get excited about something best left ignored. He was wise. Was Kidam. I'd come to respect that frail oldster a lot.
The hard times have come, Standard Bearer, and will lead to more terrible tomorrows.
He reviewed my discussion with Mogaba well enough to convince me that someone had watched us.
Why tell me this? To support my claim when I tell you we spy on the black men. After your departure, they spoke only their native tongue, until they sent messengers to the tribunes of the cohorts and other senior Taglians. They are to gather at supper time.
Sounds big. The old man bowed slightly.
I would like you to see something for yourself. You know these men more certainly than do I. You can determine if my suspicions are well founded.
You want me to spy on that meeting?
Something of the sort.
The old man didn't tell me the whole story. Not then. He wanted me walking into it cold.
Dodge will conduct you.
Chapter 65. Dodge conducted me. The way led through cellars as intricately connected as ours, but less care had been used in the tunneling. The people who did this just wanted to be able to sneak away. They'd had no intention of hiding. They must have been Jaikuri collaborators in Storm Shadow's administration, acting for her. She would have wanted an emergency exit. I'm surprised at you, I told Uncle Doge. I wouldn't think underground would occur to swamp people. I don't suppose there are a lot of tunnels in the Delta?
Not many.
He smiled. My guess is they found the escape route through sheer blind luck. maybe coupled with an informed suspicion about how Storm Shadow's mind worked. Getting into the Citadel, then, was no problem, though it required some crawling. The architects had not been concerned with Storm Shadow's dignity. It was tough for me. I wasn't yet back to my best. We came to a small open space beneath a ladder. That rose straight up into infinity, so far as I could see by the light of one feeble candle. I had a feeling the candle was a luxury laid on for me, that the Nguyen Bao made this journey entirely in darkness. I couldn't have endured that. I dislike enclosed places intensely, despite having lived in them. Closed places, darkness, recurring spells and visions were not a combination I wanted to attempt. I did seem more stable lately, I reflected. I set a hand and foot on the ladder. Uncle Doge grabbed my wrist, shook his head.
What?
Isn't that the way to the council chamber? My whisper rattled off like the scurry of mice.
Not what the speaker wants you to see.
Doge used almost no air when he whispered.
Come.
There was no crawling now, just a lot of easing along sideways in an airspace almost too narrow for Uncle. His belly was going to ache from rubbing against stone. I learned that there was a lot more to Storm Shadow Citadel than I'd seen in the little time I'd spent there these past few months. Down below there, beneath the surrounding plazas, were countless unsuspected storerooms and prison cells, armories and barracks rooms, cisterns and smithies. I whispered, "They have supplies down here to hold out for years." Meaning the Gnar and their favorites holed up inside the citadel. Storm Shadow had laid in a great store against the evil day. Mogaba had lied to me, just trying to find out how well off we old crew were. Was that what the old man wanted me to know? Was this why the Nguyen Bao had seemed to prosper, while everyone else became gaunt? Were they nibbling at these stores like mice, taking just a little here and there so their predations would go unnoticed? Uncle Doge beckoned.
Hurry!
Soon I began to hear a distant chanting.
We may not be in time, Bone Warrior. Hurry!
I didn't slug him, mostly because the racket would have alerted the singing men. I knew they were Gnar before I saw a thing. I had heard the rhythms and style before, though not these particular lyrics. Always before, though, there had been joy in their work songs and celebrations. This song was cold and grim. Uncle Doge left the candle, tugged my elbow. We continued to step sideways until suddenly we were in an ordinary passageway, not some tight secret squeeze behind a wall. Nothing concealed the entrance to the hidden ways. That was just a shadowed corner, unlikely to entice a closer look. There was light out there, from candles and sconces widely spaced. The people in charge were frugal, despite their wealth. Uncle Doge placed a finger to his lips. We were near dangerous people, who might detect us in an instant. He dropped to his knees and led me right into a large chamber where most of the Gnar had gathered. Lighting was non-existent except down where they were. Doge got behind a pillar. I squatted behind a low, dusty table just inside the doorway. I wished I was as dark as the Gnar. My forehead must be shining like a little half-moon. This life hardens you. Too soon you have seen so much that when you encounter another something terrible, you don't howl and run in circles, snapping at your tail. But most of us still appreciate horror, if horror is there. Horror was there. There was an altar. Mogaba and Ochiba were involved in something ceremonial. Above the altar stood a small statue of dark stone, a four-armed woman dancing. I was too far away to make out details, but I was pretty sure she had vampire fangs and six teats. She might be wearing a necklace of baby skulls. The Nar might give her another name, but she was Kina. The worship offered by the Nar wasn't that described in the Jaikuri scriptures, though. The deceivers don't want to spill blood. That's why they're called stranglers. The Nar not only spilled blood on behalf of their goddess, they drank it. And it looked like they'd been doing so for some time down there. Drained corpses hung to one side. Their latest sacrifice, a hapless Jaikuri, got hoisted up with those soon after I arrived. The Nar were practical in their religion. After the grim ceremony ended, they began butchering one of the bodies. I got down and crawled out of there. I didn't give one rat's ass what Uncle Doge thought. I've seen a lot with the company, including tortures and cruelties almost beyond comprehension and inhumanities I don't have the capacity to fathom. But never had I encountered socially sanctioned cannibalism. I didn't puke or boil over in outrage. That would be silly. I just put distance between me and that till I could speak without worrying about who might overhear. I've seen enough. Let's get out of here. Uncle Doge responded with a thin smile and lifted eyebrow. I have to relay this. I have to write it down. We may not survive the siege. They will. Word of what they are has to survive too. He watched me closely. Was he wondering if the rest of us also enjoyed the occasional long pig roast as well? Probably. This sort of thing might go some toward explaining our ambiguous reception in these parts. Mugabe couldn't read. If it didn't occur to him that the dark side of the Nar was no secret anymore, I could leave word in my annals, to be salvaged by Lady or the old man. They are all down there, Uncle said. So we will return by a swifter path. By which he meant we would stroll through regular passageways, just like we belonged there. What's that noise? I asked. Uncle gestured for silence. We stole forward. We discovered a group of Taglian soldiers bricking up a sally port we could have used to leave. Why were they doing that? That door couldn't be broken open from the outside. It still had Storm Shadow's spells protecting it. Uncle pulled me back, headed another direction. Obviously, he knew the Citadel quite well. And I had no difficulty imagining him roaming around in there all the time, just for the hell of it. He seemed like that kind of guy. Chapter 66.
You look like somebody ate your favorite puppy, Goblin told me.
Cracks like that could be heard all the time, now that there were no more dogs. There were just two sources of meat left. The Nar exploited both. We restricted ourselves to stupid crows. I told Goblin and One Eye what I'd seen. Uncle Doge stood behind me, quietly disgruntled because I wanted to see my own people before I visited the speaker. I was barely halfway through it when One Eye interrupted.
You got to tell the whole company this one, kid.
For once, he was as serious as a spear through the gut. And for once, Goblin agreed with One Eye without any big groan and moan about the unfairness of it all.
You need to get this word out exactly the way you want it known to everybody. There's going to be a lot of talk. You don't want anybody building it up worse than it is when they pass it along.
Get them together, then. While I'm waiting, I'm going to skim those Jaikuri books. There may be something else I need to tell them.
May I join you?
Uncle Doge asked. No. Go tell the old man that I'll be there as soon as I can. This is family.
As you will.
He said something to Tai Day, stalked away. Bucket interrupted my reading.
Got them together, Murgan. All the cleat. He's off somewhere whoring, and even his brothers don't know where to find him.
All right.
It's something bad? You got that look.
Yeah.
It can get worse than it already is?
You're going to hear all about it in just a little bit. In 5 minutes, I got up in front of 60 men and told my tale, marveling as I did that a band so frail and few could be so feared. More, I marveled that there were so many of us when, hardly more than 2 years ago, there were just 7 of us pretending to be the Black Company.
You guys want to keep it down until I'm done?
The news had them excited, in a grim way.
Listen up. That is the word. They're making human sacrifices and eating the corpses. But that ain't the whole story. Ever since they joined us at Gaya's Lee, they've been hinting and even saying right out that us northern guys are heretics. That means they think the whole company used to do things their way.
That started everybody talking and yelling. I pounded a mason's hammer on a block of wood.
Shut up, you morons! It ain't the way the company ever was. The NAR never kept any annals. They would know that if they had. But they can't even read.
I couldn't be absolutely sure that human sacrifice was never a company right. We were missing several early volumes of the annals, and I now suspected strongly that our earliest 4 brethren did follow a dark and hungry god, with breath so foul and cruel that even oral histories were enough to keep the native people terrified. Most of the guys didn't care about the implications. They were just angry because the NAR were going to make life harder for them. I told them,
this is one more thing to make trouble between us and them. I want you all to realize that we might have to fight them before we get out of here. Tonight I'm bringing back some traditional business that we have let slide since Croker got to be captain. We are going to have regular readings from the annals, so you'll all know what you've become part of.
This first reading is from the Book of Ket. This part probably set down by the analyst Agrip when the company was in service to the pain god of Chondalore. Our 4 brethren endured a long and bitter siege then, though there had been a lot more of them to suffer. Additionally, I planned readings from books Croker recorded on the Plane of Fear when the company lived underground for so long. I dismissed the men to supper. One Eye. No more groaning when I announce a reading, all right? These guys didn't live through that stuff.
Chondalore was way before my time, too.
Then you need to hear about it.
Kid, I've been hearing about it for 200 years. Every damned analyst that ever was swallowed in the horrors of Chondalore. I wish I could get my hands on those guys who did the Book of Ket. You know Ket wasn't even the analyst. He was the...
Goblin, grab Otto and Hag up. I want a little confab with the oldest old crew. We 5 put our heads together, conjured a little something for the meanness. Once we had a scheme, I said, I'll see what the speaker thinks. Chapter 67. Kedam listened patiently, as an adult will to a bright child with an ingenious but impractical idea. He told me, "You are aware this could spark fighting?"
"Sure, but that's inevitable. Doge says Mugabe decided that at our meeting."
Goblin and One Eye agree. So did Hagop and Otto. None of us favored a get-along effort. There are more of us than there are Gnar. But their Taglians way outnumbered ours, and there was no way to guess how the Taglians, with either group, would jump. The old man turned to Hong Tre. A quizzical expression accentuated the lines at the corners of his eyes. Kisara knelt beside me, presenting tea. This was a step beyond anything previous. She met my wondering gaze. I don't think I slobbered. Hong Tre observed without reaction. That made her far calmer than I was. She focused on her husband, nodded. He said, "There will be fighting. Soon. The Jaikuri will revolt." That wasn't what I wanted to hear. I asked, "Will they bother your people or mine?" I shouldn't have shoved in. I apologized immediately. Kisara poured more tea for me, before even she served her grandparents. Kigota manifested like a demon conjured for its serrated tongue. She barked at her daughter in a harsh, lilting gale. The old man looked up, said one word sharply. Hong Tre supported him with a complete sentence in what I would have to call a sharp whisper. It seemed she could speak no other way. Kigota withdrew. There were well-defined limits and absolute hierarchy inside the Ki family. I glanced at the beautiful woman. She met my eye again, rocked back, and rose, flushing. Was something going on? They wouldn't try to manipulate me, would they? It wouldn't work. No woman, not even this woman, was that special. And Kedam had seen enough of me to guess that about me. If he wanted to manipulate me, he would have better luck trading me the straight poop on why the hell everybody pissed blue when the company got mentioned. He and the old woman batted whispers back and forth in flurries. Suddenly, he told me, "We will join you in this enterprise, Standard Bearer. Provisionally. Hong believes that fighting between the Jaikuri and the soldiers of the Black Man is imminent. It will be fierce, but might not touch the rest of us. That would provide sufficient distraction. But I must insist that Doge has the option to end it if it risks calling unfriendly attention to our people." "Excellent. Of course. Done. Though I would have tried it without you." Kedam permitted himself a small smile, either at my enthusiasm or at the prospect of adding a little more misery to Mogava's life. After dark, assuming the riots got started, we were going to steal Mogava's food stores. Chapter 68. It started like a well-rehearsed play, where Mogava's characters were desperate to please their audience. The rioting, that is. Uncle Doge and I formed work parties to take advantage. We got into the storage chambers without challenge. 10 old crew and 10 Yuang Bao. We started dragging off sacks of rice and flour, sugar and beans. The riots were nasty from the start. They swamped the whole southern half of Dejigore. Every man Mogaba controlled was out there helping crush the rebellion. And every Jaikuri man and boy seemed to want to get at the Gnar, even if they had to exterminate the whole First Legion to reach them. My people went on the alert, established in strong positions, long before nightfall. Likewise the Nuang Bao, who had no immediate trouble. We ambushed one mob. A shower of missiles from front, sides, and above swiftly changed their minds. Mugabe's men had more problems. They weren't ready. Worse, they were scattered, often in isolated work parties and patrols. For a while, everybody joked and cracked wise and speculated on Mugabe's first words after the fighting ended and he found his cellars plundered. I ran into Bucket my second trip back. Beans, I told him, dropping a huge sack. The change of diet will do us good.
It's real bloody out there this time, Murgan. Mugabe has asked for support twice. We told him we couldn't find you.
Well, keep on not being able. Unless it looks like we would end up worse off if we didn't help.
That's not likely. He has most of the weapons. His men have been throwing people off the wall by the hundreds. Just anybody. Whether or not they're rebelling. Men, women, and children.
That's Mugabe's way. What about those fires?
There were a few.
Whenever there's disorder, somebody starts burning things down.
They're burning themselves out.
Everything's going fine then. But keep an eye out. I went back to my looting, happy as the proverbial clam. This might be the end of Mugabe as a royal pain in the ass. Uncle Doge caught me in the storage chamber later.
Some Taglian soldiers are abandoning their posts for the safety of the citadel. If we continue this raiding, we will get caught.
Yeah. If we don't get spotted, Mugabe will blame it on natives who knew about the passageways.
This raid was going to cost us our opportunity to spy on any more staff meetings.
It was worth it. Would I feel the same way tomorrow, when Mugabe began looking for his stores, when I had a full belly?
There is a small problem, Standard Bearer,
Uncle Doge said a while later. Each of us staggered under a last sack of rice. We were the last brigands out.
What's that?
News of our success is sure to leak.
Why? Only a few people know. It's in all their interest to stay clammed.
Someone talked about what I showed you earlier.
Huh?
The dark ceremonies. Someone talked. The rumor sparked tonight's riots.
I don't believe that. They were too organized.
There was an organized cadre, naturally, but this uprising was more widespread. It is also out of control.
Whatever you say.
He'd spent his evening with me. He'd had no chance to observe any riots. Before he could respond, Tai Day popped out of the darkness. He gobbled away, becoming too animated for the space. If he killed my candle, I was going to choke him. As soon as I found him.
What's happening?
The black men are trying to break open the north gate and flood the city.
They're what?
That would take care of the riots, all right. But not even Mugabe would go that far. Would he? Uncle Doge and I did our best to run carrying sacks of rice. I bet we looked silly. Chapter 69.
Otto, Hagop, One Eye, Goblin, Geek, Freak, Bucket and Candles. You guys come with me. The Owl Cool Company will help us. Weezer went to get them. We'll go straight along the battlements. If the Nar get in the way, we trample them. If they fight us, we kill them. That understood?
Not even Goblin or One-Eye tried to lawyer. We were some of the people Mogaba meant to drown. The Taglians arrived. They were Vedna by religion, and the best Taglians attached to the company. They were reliable and almost friendly. Of 600 who had come south from Taglios months ago, only about 60 were left. I explained what was happening, what I wanted to do about it, and how they could help. They would overrun anyone trying to open the gate after Goblin and One-Eye softened them up. Don't hurt anybody unless they just plain force you.
Why not?
Candles demanded.
They're trying to hurt us.
Mogaba is. These guys are just following orders. I'll bet you we don't find any Gnar there when we get there. And I'll bet you that if they open the gate, they get hurt as bad as anybody else. Mogaba doesn't need them anymore.
Let's just do it,
Goblin groused.
Or go back and catch a few beers.
I moved them out. Maybe my blackouts gave me the gift of prophecy. There were no Gnar at the North Gate. The fighting was so brief and desultory, it almost didn't take place. The Taglians working there fled. Damn. Mogaba would find out who foiled his latest nastiness. I told One-Eye, this will mean no more pretending we're buddies.
Yeah. Show me how to sneak into the Citadel. I'll put a sleep spell on him, then leave pieces of him all over his crazy temple.
That didn't sound like a bad idea. We had no opportunity to implement it. Somebody yelled up at me. I peered down into the gloom. It was Uncle Doge. I hadn't included any Nuang Bao in this. I had not seen any need to put them onto Mogaba's bad side, too.
What?
He shouted.
This was a diversion! The real flooding will start at... Oh, shit. Yeah.
Mogaba did know me well enough to anticipate that I might interfere.
Come on!
I snapped.
Everyone!
I hustled down to the street.
Where?
I demanded of Doge.
Eastgate!
Would Mogaba also anticipate me crossing town to spoil his game amidst the Jaikuri uprising? He might. He might hope my crew would get trapped and overrun or badly cut up. There was no guessing what he thought anymore. He was crazy. One-Eye and Goblin eased us past bands of both Jaikuri and Taglians. We skirmished with the Jaikuri twice, our numbers and sorcery telling quickly. The light of scattered fires set scary shadows dancing everywhere. What a time for the Shadow Master to send his monsters out to play. We encountered barricades erected to protect the soldiers trying to open the gate. This time we faced Gnar as well as Taglians. A lot of shouting went back and forth. Some of their Goonie Taglians tried to run away when our Vedna Taglians convinced them that Mogaba was trying to drown everybody. The Gnar cut down several would-be deserters. I told Goblin and One-Eye,
you break up whatever they're doing to open the gate. The rest of you, let's chase them off. Go for the Gnar first.
An instant later, an arrow found the eye of a Gnar named Endebo. Another of the Gnar speared the Geek, an incredibly handsome youngster who joined the company while we were crossing the savannah north of Gaezli several years earlier. One-Eye hung the uncomplimentary name on him. He wore it with pride, refusing to be called anything else. For the first time in its history, insofar as I was aware, company brother slew sworn brother in willful combat. Geek's blood brother Freak slew the Gnar responsible for Geek's death.
but I never learned the Nar's name, so I can't remember him here. Most of the First Legion Taglians took off then. Many of the Owl Cool soldiers didn't want to fight either, although those other Taglians were goony. Still, quickly, a genuine small battle had friend hacking at supposed friend. I happened to glance back and noticed that armed Jaikuri had begun to gather to watch. Uncle Doge faced them alone, poised in an odd but apparently relaxed ready stance. Long sword vertical.
Oh, shit!
Goblin shrieked.
God damn it! Look out!
What?
We're too late! It's going to go!
Something began to grind and groan like the hinges of the world breaking loose. The masonry blocking the gateway bulged inward. The fighting stopped. Fast. Everybody faced the gate. A sudden spear of water shot through the bulge. Every man there took off. Nar and Black Company, Guni and Vedna Taglian, Jaikuri and Lone Nguyen Bao running side by side, splitting up, heading whatever direction felt safest, but everybody always getting away from that gate. The masonry gave one final mighty groan. The water roared triumphantly and charged inside. Chapter 70. The water thundered through the gate, but there was no evidence of it yet where I stood. I was in a good mood, considering. While passing the citadel, I saw the Nar trying to shuffle their own kind inside without admitting any Taglians. I chuckled. Mogava was going to bust a vein when he found the water coming in through his cellars. I now understood why those soldiers had been breaking up. The flood was no spur-of-the-moment plan. Mogava must have nurtured the idea from the moment that Shadow Spinner had used water to isolate Dejagore. As we parted, I told Uncle Doge,
"Swim over and see me sometime."
15 minutes later, I was discussing waterproofing. Our measures had begun the day we started our warrens, but not in anticipation of anything like this. Enemies employing smoke and fire had been our real concern.
"Longo! You guys explored every part of those catacombs? They aren't open anywhere."
I was surprised that Storm Shadow hadn't broken into them when she was building the citadel. Maybe she got her location advice from knowledgeable locals.
"I didn't see anything. They were plastered good way back when because they were below the level of the plain. But if you put 70 feet of water out there and 30 in the streets, sooner or later we'll find a way in. The best we can do, really, is fight a holding section. How about just sealing them off? We could try, but I wouldn't bother until flooding became a..."